listening to Beating Goliath, the blood, sweat, and tears of healthcare startups. In each episode, we interview a founder or an executive and find out how they're punching above their weight and winning. We'll also have cameos from angel investors and VCs. So if you want to get juicy insider tips, be sure to tune in. And here's your host, tech entrepreneur, advisor, and angel investor, Joyce Tang.
Today, our guest is a healthcare startup founder who is working on something that can affect all of us when we visit our doctors. He is Arup Roy Berman, co-founder and CEO of Elemental Health. He's also an associate professor at UCSF School of Medicine. Kind of a double threat here. So Arup, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here, Joyce.
Terrific. So tell us a little bit about Elemental Health, what it does, and when did you found it?
Sure. Elemental was founded in 2016. However, we developed a prototype at UCSF from 2012 until 2016. And as for what we do, let me start with a quick bit of background.
Mm-hmm.
So healthcare knowledge is growing exponentially. In the past, our frontline teams could easily master their number of tasks at hand, but now they're overwhelmed. We've got a rapidly expanding gap between institutional knowledge, or we could say policy, and actual frontline practice. The result is increasing practice variation, and this leads to inefficiencies and, most importantly, errors. And those are the third leading cause of death today in the U.S. And I've worked at some of the best hospitals in this country, both academic and private. But unfortunately, in every one, I've seen patients die from preventable errors. This shouldn't happen to anyone, anywhere. So we created a solution. So with that, I mean, what is Elemental? Elemental is a cloud-based web app that drives frontline adoption of best practices. We do this through just-in-time support at the point of need. By driving consistency of practices at scale, healthcare systems can deliver higher quality, safety, and reliability, and do this at a lower cost. So we help our clients transform their priority best practices into actionable smart checklists, interactive decision guides, and concise how-to video. And then we distribute, promote, and track them across frontline staff. We make it fun. We add gamification and social and peer recognition. This drives engagement, and it leverages the natural hierarchies of rivalries in the institution, shift against shift, unit against unit, clinic against clinic, up to department and hospital. And then it's more than just accountability to your supervisors. It's about peer accountability and transparency with your peers. So unlike so many other healthcare IT systems, Elemental is more like a consumer technology. It's really designed around the user. Makes it accessible on any device from hospital network to personal mobile. And we're accessible 24/7 on demand. It's really when you need it. And this helps assure us in getting the right practice to the right person at the right time. So in kind of a long nutshell there, that's what we do.
Uh-huh. It is just wonderful. And the way that it can affect all of our lives. And for full disclosure, I am one of the investors in this company. And precisely because I think it shows great premise and exactly what it can do for many of us. And so, Arup, you are an associate professor, and so can you tell us a little bit about your career path prior to creating the startup? Was it academic? Was it clinical or both?
It's both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we kind of go way back, as a child of two scientists, I've long been interested in research and discovery. I spent my high school summers working in the labs of my dad and his peer professors at USC. And when I went to college at Cal, I continued to cultivate my interests in the long game of basic science research. But I also became increasingly interested in the immediate satisfaction of helping people directly. And I ultimately turned down an offer for a great MD-PhD program in Seattle, come to UCSF for just straight med school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the most important aspects I learned from my mentors in the lab was that it's all about building a great team, your technicians, your grad students, your postdocs. And on the clinical end, you know, I was learning the same thing. And with pediatrics in particular, what was appealing to me is that the team was not just the healthcare providers, but extended out to the parents, to the families. And as I went into pediatrics and then specialized in intensive care, that brought me into UCSF and Children's Oakland. Both of these are really high-performing clinical centers, and they've got excellent residency, fellowship, and research programs. So in these rich environments, I was able to continue to grow both clinically and academically. So it's really, I can't separate those two. They're always tied in with each other, really, to continually perform the highest level of clinical care. It really requires that academic interest of wanting to learn what is continually evolving, what is better, and then to turn around and to apply that into clinical practice. That's been my career path, and it's the culture that we try to drive within Elemental Health.
Uh-huh. So as a practicing physician, I mean, you had a pretty well-paid job, but you had to quit it to dive right in for the startup. Has anybody called you crazy?
Yeah. A lot of people. from my peers
to my friends. So how did your family react to it?
You know, thankfully, my family's been very supportive. My wonderful wife, she's a child neurologist, and she's experienced many of the same pains and frustrations with healthcare that I have. And, you know, moreover, we both have interests for a long time in thinking outside the box and integrating principles across professions, verticals, or applied sciences. You know, she's kind of worked together bringing together medicine and education, and I've worked on the side of bringing together medicine, tech, and gaming. And in fact, both of us were entrepreneurs in a way when we co-founded a pediatric clinic back in Honduras in 2002.
Oh, wow.
And we ultimately brought that under the umbrella of a 501c3 Global Healing based in Berkeley and went on to their board of directors. We've grown this to be one of their flagship programs. So in a way, that was the first business that we were entrepreneurs in starting up and running. And now we've moved from the nonprofit end to the commercial end.
Mm-hmm. No wonder. Because I was wondering, you know, how were you able to find such conviction? But it sounds like, I mean, it's just running through your blood. And it's always so helpful to have a very supportive spouse, right? Not only from, you know, kind of an emotional, you know, daily sort of way, but, you know, in a quote unquote technical way, which is, you know, really in a professional sense that she's able to really speak the same language with you.
Yeah, that's been very important for me on that kind of personal end at home. And that's the support that we needed. That's, you know, going back to the point on conviction, you know, it's really all about our patients. Mm-hmm. You know, I've worked at four premier med centers through my career, and in each, I've personally experienced that pain of trying in vain to save patients who have been harmed by medical errors. And these are errors that were made by very well-educated and well-intentioned staff who are doing their best, but they just did not have those key institutional practices, that key institutional knowledge immediately at hand when it was actually needed. And, you know, to take it, you know, even a little further back or a lot further back, there's another personal aspect. You know, when I was a kid, my younger sister was born with congenital heart disease, something that's very simple nowadays called a ventricular septal defect. I knew it then as what they call a hole in her heart. And she had care at Children's LA, which was, you know, considered by many the best children's center in California. And, you know, when I was in second grade, I vividly recall saying goodbye to her one morning as she was going to the hospital for what was to be the last step in her full surgical repair.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, in the OR, something happened and she passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
My parents heard about this from a young intern, somebody barely out of medical school who came out of the OR. and spoke with them. We never had a good explanation of what actually happened. This shouldn't happen to anyone. And I owe it to my sister and my family to be able to help other children and adults, you know, receive really the safest and highest quality care as possible. And that's the level of care every individual deserves. We in healthcare collectively know so much, but we struggle so hard to be able to actually implement that knowledge at the front lines. So, you know, that's what we do. We haven't invented any new practice. We're taking data and knowledge from our community and empowering those folks at the front line to actually use it and to make a difference.
I see. Wow. What a powerful story and sad story behind, you know, the reason for building this startup. And despite all the well intentions in this industry and mistakes, right, along the way, healthcare really is a slower moving space than one might expect. And doctors are actually early adopters. I mean, you know, think of them, you know, way back when they were one of the earliest BlackBerry users. But as an industry as a whole, healthcare is also a laggard because of the regulations and the general conservative stance that many healthcare entities simply would have to take because, well, you know, there are lawsuits and, you know, there are various concerns and such. And so what have been some of the rejections that's hit you the hardest?
Yeah, I guess I would start with, you know, where I came from, academic medicine. Academic medicine is an intense place. We've got so many amazing individuals, all trying to make healthcare better. But paired with this are strong personalities and personal convictions. Hitting me hardest have been the unexpected rejections from a small number of key peers who'd been strong partners while I was in academia, but, you know, who now viewed me differently, now as a vendor in the industry. I mean, they were my teammates before, but suddenly I was on the other side, and that was unexpected.
So how long was it before you got your first paid customer, you know, after, you know, fighting the Goliath, right, so to speak? So when did you get that first check or first yes?
Well, you know, on the flip side, being in academic medicine and understanding that space and having developed those connections, we were able to quickly gain the support of a contingent at UCSF and Innovations. And through a collaboration agreement, we were piloting Elemento at UCSF within 3 months. And from there, we had our first paid customer within 6 months.
Wow, that's actually very quick in startup speed, because it's an uphill battle, right, for a lot of startup founders. And even just to get their calls answered sometimes, that's just very, very difficult. And for you to be able to get your first paid customer that soon, that really speaks to the value proposition of your solution and then just how needed, how hungry the industry is for this kind of solution, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm. So would you say that was a big break for you, or are you angling for your really big break, would you say?
My big break? I'd say that there were a couple of different breaks. I think there's two that really come to mind. First, maybe kind of unexpected here for the listeners. I'd say the first break was created by Mark Benioff. And so let me tell you that story. You know, with a few years back that Mark directed his philanthropy at Salesforce to UCSF. And many people thought this was to build the new children's hospital. But also what he did was introduced a tried and true technology, CRM, that was tried and true in the business world, and introduced that into academic medicine. And it was shortly after this, the philanthropy from Benioff, that I was recruited to UCSF for the purpose of driving clinical performance in the ICU and growing our referral base as director of transport across the hospital. And when I came to UCSF, I asked a lot of people, do you know what CRM is? And they didn't. And I said, you know, we talk about customer relationship management. Imagine if we could better understand the folks that are referring patients to us. And if we can better understand their needs and the quality of our services, we can much more strategically deploy our scarce resources to be able to help them and cultivate those relationships. And as a corollary, how about we look internal to our institution? From us in leadership, let's look at our front lines as our customers. And if we can better empower and engage our frontline staff and learn their needs and address them, we're going to have happier and more effective frontline staff. And what does that mean? Better patient outcomes. So it was that bit of inspiration from Salesforce that went a long ways for us in developing this solution for our frontline healthcare teams. And then the second, what I would say, big break, that would be Y Combinator. Mm. So my co-founder and I went through a wonderful entrepreneurship program at UCSF called Startup 101. And that culminated with a presentation to VCs. And they had a look at what Elemental would do. And they thought that, hey, this has legs in the commercial world. But like you said, you know, it's a big leap to go from really an established job in healthcare to entrepreneurship. And we then took what we had developed at UCSF and applied to Y Combinator in the summer of 2016. And we were a late applicant at that. But YC liked it, and they invited us into the batch, and with it, a small investment. That kind of, I guess, external business affirmation was huge. That really was the signal to say, hey, this is an idea that is not just for healthcare, but is actually for a business too. And it was with that affirmation that we made the leap.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, the way they would imagine a Y Combinator cohort look like, it will be a bunch of, you know, 20-year-old guys, right? You know, they might have gotten one or two jobs, and then now they're starting a, you know, their own company. And for you, you have an established career, you know, obviously a professional track and family. So now, you know, you are among these guys. How was that experience like?
It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, while we were not the oldest in our batch, we were pretty close to it. But, you know, there's a tremendous amount of energy with youth, a tremendous amount of idealism. And us as being older in that space, but coming in, on the flip side, we were also inspirational to a lot of the folks there. And it was very helpful for me in how do we think outside the box? And when you think outside the box, you can actually disrupt an industry. The other piece to it was that the Y Combinator companies are all about how do you design around the consumer? How do you, you know, decrease the friction for adoption or for getting into an organization? And many of the points that we learned there in YC, we then turned around and used to inspire the ongoing design and evolution of our product. Even though they are not in the healthcare space per se, that's not their forte. Their forte is customer-centered design, and that's what helps to distinguish us amongst the other healthcare IT solutions.
Uh-huh. And so with this average founder's age, it's actually a bit of a myth that the majority of founders are in their 20s. I think there are stats that actually say the average is really more around 40, you know, mm-hmm. which is a bit surprising. And also there are stats that say the successful founders tend to trend a little bit older because obviously they come with them a lot of industry knowledge, domain expertise, and some maturity. And obviously in life, you tend to step into more potholes as you get older and try to avoid them. And so the successful one tends to be a bit older. So it's a very interesting thing. So now, right now, what would you say is the biggest obstacle you're up against? Is there any major competition, or is it simply inaction or lack of education?
I'd say the biggest obstacle that we're up against is time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no doubt in the value of our solution. And, you know, to touch base on your point about that, the age of founders, you know, in healthcare, for those of us who are physicians, we've really completed our training and are finally there at an attending faculty level when we're in our late 20s or early 30s. So, you know, it takes a lot of time to understand the system. And from, you know, my perspective of 20 years in practice and our nurse leader's perspective of 30 years, we've really had that unique perspective of understanding how the healthcare system works and the perspectives of those of frontline teams as we were part of them ourselves. You know, this was our pain, and we drove the solution to fix it. And healthcare is inherently risk averse. So having people who really walk the walk, not just talking the talk, that makes a big difference in trying to get that initial trust with folks. You know, we're a scalable tech solution for processes that are otherwise driven by countless people, paper, emails, and disparate websites. Each client that we take on de-risks our approach for other potential clients, and that makes growth and each subsequent contract easier. So that brings it all back to time. You know, we've got our early customers. We're bringing on more. The more and more that we bring on, the faster it'll be, the easier it'll be to bring on the subsequent one. So that's what we need to get through, and the more that I can compress that time, the shorter it'll be, the better for us. Mm-hmm. And you asked about competition. You know, our competition are these archaic and resource-intense processes. Publishing companies, interestingly, they've begun to realize the importance of just-in-time support or on-demand support, and they've developed content libraries. However, user-centered design is not their forte, and they do not understand as well, you know, how healthcare systems actually operate at the front lines, let alone how to leverage technology to improve communication and coordination between management and staff. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. So with that, it sounds like these conventional publishing companies, they're obviously missing a very important core piece of competency, right, in order to get into the fight with you guys. Are you concerned that maybe they will use money to try to squash you?
I think that possibility is there for any startup. But I would think that if somebody's really interested in what we are doing, we bring a tremendous amount of domain expertise and early success that rather looking at how do they partner with us? How do they work with us rather than against us? And as a startup, you know, I understand that successful startups, 80% are ultimately acquired by another company. Only 20% will, of those that are successful, will go to an IPO. So what we see here is that when the right partner comes along that can help us to scale what it is that we're trying to do, the right thing to do would be to partner with them, to work with them, because that's the fastest way we can get our approach, our solution out to the highest number of providers, not just in the U.S., but across the globe. Because at the end of the day, our core mission is to make healthcare safer and higher quality for every patient out there. And we're going to do that working with others.
Right. Why fight when you can just work together and make the pie bigger for everybody, right?
And absolutely.
At the same time, make the world a better place. So one thing about your solution that I really like is it doesn't require integration. And that reduces a lot of friction when it comes to rolling it out. So it also has a gamification element, which makes it fun and easier for people to adopt. So did you have to evolve your product, or is it pretty much how you first envisioned it?
The product is, you know, at a high level, it's the way that we first envisioned it. But it's really the details that have continually evolved. You know, we looked at the issue of integration with healthcare IT. You know, having, you know, worked in healthcare for so long at so many different places, I've seen how difficult it is to be able to drive change within the EHR and the electronic health record. And the EHR really is, it's a record of what we have done and a record of what we need to do. And like a yin and a yang, Elemental complements this with a staff-centered platform of how to do it. So our, you know, intent from the beginning was to help staff with the engagement of key best practice content. And our goal from the beginning was to be lightweight. So, you know, at a high level, we continue to build upon our original aims. However, in the details, our product is continually evolving, and that's based upon end user feedback. And as a cloud solution, kind of a single instance multi-tenant, we can easily deliver our latest improvements and newest features to all of our customers just as they're developed. And just as our content is a living ecosystem, we see our product as a living system, growing based upon our customers' needs.
Mm-hmm. So you come with you, you bring to the startup subject matter expertise in healthcare, but then you're not a programmer, obviously. And so I hear from some non-technical founders who would always ask, how can they find a really good technical co-founder? So how did you find yours and somebody who's willing to give up their job and take the dive with you and have the same kind of passion and devotion?
Yeah, it's not easy. There's going to be some serendipity in there. I think, you know, you got to have a little bit of luck in there. But let me back up on that. Let's say a strong tech founder is really essential. You know, I cannot imagine outsourcing the tech piece from the start. And, you know, your tech founder is key to building the foundation, a foundation that needs to be strong and understandable to others, to other engineers, so that you can continually build and evolve upon it. Now, the type of person that you need is somebody who is really sold on your mission. In our case, my co-founder, Ed, given his own personal family experiences in healthcare, experiences that were painful and difficult, he wondered why he was just making games and entertainment. And I should, you know, just for way of background, he's got a 20-year history in game development and was at Electronic Arts for many years. But then, you know, after going through these experiences, he was wondering about why he wasn't doing something more with his skills, you know, something that he could do to help people. And I found Ed through my personal network. In the months before founding Elemento, got together with a bunch of good friends in my network, many from the tech and business industries. And we talked about what we had been doing with the prototype. And they were all in favor of, hey, you really should try to commercialize this. And one of those individuals at that meeting, good friend and colleague who's now one of the leads for talent recruitment at Riot Games, she goes, well, let me see what I can do with my network of being in tech for so long. Let me see who I can find. And, you know, her short list included Ed. And funny enough, over that same time, Ed and I coincidentally met at a school camp for our kids. And we hung out, took a long hike together talking about what I was doing. And, you know, we both saw potential here for a business with really a double bottom line, not just something to make money, but something to do a lot of human good. And when our longtime mutual friend and colleague recommended that we connect, that we'd be a good match, that really sealed the deal for us.
Ah, wow. So it's that hike.
Yeah, it's that hike. You know, it's getting away from things and really being able to focus on what's important and do that in a relaxed setting where, you know, you can those ideas can flow freely and you can have a really open dialogue.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, just like Steve Jobs, he likes to, you know, just go out and walk around and have that very important conversation just by going out there and walking around with somebody, you know, right? And I think when he was trying to convince the Pepsi CEO to join Apple, which of course becomes a decision that he later would regret because he got kicked out.
Yeah.
It was a hike, you know, that very important walk, you know, around, you know, their office. And so in order to take your
And that's actually one of my favorite qualities of my co-founder. He loves to take all of his one-on-ones with the different folks on our team. All of them are going out for a walk, and we're fortunate enough to live work by the estuary in Oakland. So walk by the water.
Wow.
It really helps to kind of, you know, really open your mind, but at the same time, really keep that focus, if you will, on that person that you're having the conversation with.
Absolutely. And I actually find myself doing that too. I would bring a colleague out and we'll just walk around the block. We don't have an estuary, unfortunately. We're walking around, you know, the buildings and industry parks, but just, you know, going out there instead of, and walking side by side, right? There's just so much to that.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, sitting in front of each other or even sitting around the conference table. It could be round, and some people say, well, you know, the shape of, you know, your conference table matters, where people sit matters. But really, when you do go out there, you're walking side by side, and it's almost like psychologically it puts both of you on the same side heading towards the same kind of direction. And there's just something about it, and getting out there and just really hashing out the ideas or thoughts or whatnot, it does a lot.
Exactly.
Amazing. So people should try that more. So in order to take your solution to market, obviously it takes a lot of money and you've had to fundraise. So I'm sure you have some strategies over time, lessons that you've learned, right? Places that might be easier to fundraise or a way to pitch somebody. So do you have some tips for other founders who may just be thinking about fundraising?
Sure. So first of all, bootstrap for as long as you can. You know, build as much value in the company as possible before having to take on additional capital and taking on dilution. And that being said, unless you're incredibly lucky or incredibly wealthy, you will need to take on additional capital. And when you do that, you know, the sooner you can bring on investors who can bring additional value with mentorship and or affirmation, that is key. You know, if you're able to bring on investors who have domain expertise in the space that you are operating and in the space that you are selling to. So like for us, if we're able to bring in folks who are involved in patient safety, in quality, in reliability, in healthcare efficiency, or in regulatory, those types of folks, when they come on as investors and come onto your team, they send a very strong signal to others who would like to follow on. Investors are, you know, just like as I talked about earlier, how the hospitals who are buyers want to be able to de-risk engaging Alameda as a new technology. Investors want signs of de-risking. They want others to come on board with that expertise and or in those numbers, if you will, so that they can share risk. So I guess that would be my biggest piece of advice, getting folks in the domain. And then in regards to the types of investors, if you can get large investors are certainly in a way better than small investors because you can making the sell to one group, you can bring in a lot of capital versus having to go to a number of small individuals. And that ties into my experience, for example, with angel groups, which initially to me sounded great. But what I found is that there were so many people that you had to talk to, and the process was long and somewhat slow. And then really success was contingent upon having somebody in that angel group who had already invested in you, who could then evangelize what you are doing to their peers and bring their peers on. Without such a champion, it's much more difficult to be successful with angel groups.
Mm-hmm. So for you right now, you are currently actively fundraising, right? You're in a round right now.
Yeah. So last year we had closed our Series Seed, and that was led by institutional investor Launchpad Digital Health. We're aiming for our Series A next year. Right now we are in the midst of a note round, and that's what we're doing right now. Bringing on this additional capital will allow us to have even stronger metrics when we go in for our Series A next year.
So, of course, in investor money, there is smart money, right, where the investor not only is bringing in money, they're also bringing in their knowledge, their network, and that's really smart money that any founder would love to have. But sometimes founders really just needed that fund, and they just wanted money regardless. So it sounds like you didn't have that because you've had early traction, you've had good network, and you've had some really good name brand investors too. And by name brand, I mean, you know, they really come with them expertise in this arena and a very great reputation.
Absolutely. At the very, very beginning with that bootstrapping, yeah, there were the friends and family that helped us out, people who, you know, believed in us simply as people and just on our history of what we've done before. And, you know, I am so thankful to those individuals to get us rolling. And from there, we were able to put together product that could prove value and bring on those investors with that domain expertise and that, you know, smart money. But, you know, if you're early stage, you know, you'll need to do what you have to do to get things going. But as soon as you can, bring on those investors who can bring you value even more than simply capital, but they can bring you on that advising, that domain expertise, and or some type of affirmation for others that you will be able to sell.
Right. So before we part ways, there's a question that I always love to ask. If you can go back in time, I mean, just like the movie Back to the Future, where Michael J. Fox's character bought a sports almanac and Biff stole it and brought it back to his younger self, what is something that you'll tell your younger self now that you know what you know now, so much wiser today, when you get to fly back in your DeLorean? So what would you tell your or bring back to your younger self, for that matter?
I'd say when you see an opportunity, you know, don't be paralyzed by fear. Don't be paralyzed by the fear of failure or how your peers may perceive you. It's really, you hear so many people talk about ideas and what they thought of in the past that came into fruition when somebody else did it. Now, ideas are really a dime a dozen. But, you know, taking the leap to action, that's what actually brings results. And if I were to go back in time, I would have made more of those leaps. And I think we all should have.
Wow. I love that. I love that. So with that, I'm not going to say anything more. This is a great way to end the podcast. Well, Arup, I wanted to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us your experience, your insights. It's tremendous. And I love what Elemental Health does, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Joyce.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Beating Goliath. I hope you were able to get some useful takeaways. If you think of a cool guest that's perfect for our interview series, or if you have any comments, I would love to hear from you. Just search for Joyce Tang San Diego on LinkedIn. So now, go kick some butts!